piece of paper out of my pocket, which reminds me of a story that's quite famous or infamous, according to how you look at it. Someone like me, a politician, had a speech, and he was reading a speech and came to a page, and all it said on it, "You're on your own, you're SOB." So I was kind of make sure I had the right thing in front of me. We've had a wonderful conference. We had over 1,000 people here today. The final speaker is going to be one of my favorite public office holders in America. New York City is a famous city. The mayor of New York City, Mayor Bloomberg, is a man who really made it on his own. He is now a man of wealth. He's a man who did it, as I indicated, on his own. But interestingly enough, this man who represents this very famous city, this man of means, is a person who goes to work with public transportation, a man who has as his office part of the bullpen where other New York City employees work. He has a desk with all the rest of them. He's a person, I've never known anyone as goal-oriented as Michael Bloomberg. In his office now, he has a clock, and it's counting down. It's counting down to the time when he no longer will hold office, and he's doing it by the day. The purpose of the clock is to remind him how few days he has left to accomplish so much for the city that he loves, New York City. We're so fortunate to have him here because his term of office in New York has truly been a success. He's the envy of the rest of the mayors around this country. He's a person who was reelected very easily in the largest city, of course, in 2005. He has a number of things he'll talk to us about. He is so creative, not only in his personal life and making the fortune that he has, but in his public life, making New York City the city that it is. For example, his plan, NYC, takes a comprehensive approach to creating a greener, greater New York. This plan includes a 14-point strategy for improving energy efficiency and clean energy usage that could yield remarkable and will yield remarkable benefits for both the city, the state of New York, and the entire country. If a large and complex city like New York can successfully undertake an effort like Plan NYC, then certainly we, outside of New York City, we clearly have reason to believe that we can start a national global clean energy revolution here today. The final speaker in this national summit here in Las Vegas is Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Harry, thank you for what it's worth. That clock says 499 days left. And it'll also show you the hours. It's a little bit less than 4 hours in addition to that. But it is the most wonderful city, and I've had the most wonderful job. And we're going to try to do as much as we can and leave to our successors the tools to carry on. And hopefully whoever succeeds me will do an even better job. Most wonderful thing in the world is to pick a good successor, and I'm heck-bent for leather to try to do that. Anyways. Let me congratulate you, the Center for American Progress Action Fund, and our host, the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, on this very successful conference. To get in here, this is an even hotter ticket than Cher at Caesar's Palace, although I will say your costumes are a bit more modest from what I can see. Seriously, this is the right meeting with the right people and in the right place. And this is a city, as you know, that people really love green. In fact, they want to leave town with as much of it in their pockets as possible. Although I should point out that at the roulette tables, betting on green is a risky proposition. So don't do it with the rent money, but the people from Las Vegas would love to have you leave some here. In the real world, the one that we're here to talk about, green, is the only safe bet, however, for America and indeed for our entire planet's future. Let me take you back 5 years ago this week, August 14th, 2003. This country got an object lesson in how big a gamble we're taking on our future if we don't change course. About 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Eastern Standard Daylight Time, I guess it was that afternoon, the power suddenly went off for 50 million people across the Northeast United States and Canada, and that included my city, New York. And as New York's mayor, I will never forget what happened that day. Fortunately, because of our first responders, they were well-trained and well-equipped, they rescued hundreds of people who were trapped in high-rise elevators all over town, and they did it without incidents. Thousands more were evacuated from stalled subway trains through dark and sweltering tunnels, but with no injuries whatsoever. Hospitals that were prepared for such an event hurriedly shifted to emergency backup generators that kept respirators and other life-saving equipment running, and I'm happy to say it happened with virtually no failures. That evening, the Great White Way, otherwise known as Broadway, went dark. Flights in and out of our airports came to a halt, and traffic on our streets came to a standstill. Telephone and cell service was seriously disrupted, and for 48 hours, the greatest city on earth stopped doing business, educating our youth and entertaining our visitors. I might also point out with some pride that during that period, our already low crime rate plummeted. The people of New York, even the so-called criminal element, pulled together and made it work. And I think we came out of that day with a new appreciation for what it takes to be ready and what to do if a calamity strikes, and that at least that time, and I hope in the future as well, we stood the test. I really was proud of the way New York pulled through that crisis by pulling together. And still, as the blackout hit that afternoon, the same thought raced through my mind that raced through the minds of many New Yorkers. Had we been struck by terrorists? It was, after all, less than 2 years after 9/11. But instead, we learned that this time, the enemy was us. Us and our failure to take care of our infrastructure. Let me tell you how the biggest blackout in the history of our nation happened that day. Power lines became overloaded in Ohio. They sagged, they touched some tree branches, they shorted out. Then they started a power failure that cascaded across thousands of square miles in a matter of minutes. The world's greatest nation was shown to have a power grid that was seriously overstrained and out of date. Now let's fast forward 5 years later to today. In those 5 years, the population of the United States has grown by roughly 10 million people. Demand for electricity, as you can see outside this building up and down the strip, has kept climbing as well. And our power grid in those 5 years? Well, since then, there has been a handful of steps, in all fairness, that have improved reliability. But the fact remains that in their last report card on our infrastructure 3 years ago, the American Society of Civil Engineers gave the nation's electricity grid a D. And we haven't even started to do enough since then to prepare the grid for the challenges of transporting the vast new supplies of clean, reliable power that our nation needs and that we have not had the wisdom to generate. Right now, energy is the number one issue in America, and anyone who's filled up a gas tank recently can certainly see that. And we ought to be having a real debate on our energy future from our major presidential candidates. Instead, I think we all agree, sadly, they're treating us to a political silly season, one with candidates calling for opening up the nation's strategic oil reserve and the other for giving the federal gasoline tax the summer off. For shame, the best can be said about these ideas is that they're pandering. Far worse, you can applaud, it really is true. Far worse, they're distractions from the deadly serious business of creating a new national energy policy. Now, recently, I had dinner with a UN ambassador from one of the Persian Gulf states who described in great detail the massive investments his nation is making in developing alternative energy sources so they won't be dependent on foreign oil when theirs run out. Think about it. What turned the world upside down? What did I miss here? We should be doing that too. We should be doing that here. Our government should be doing it, and our candidate should be talking about it. Not just clean energy planning and production, but also conservation, transmission, and every element of our energy needs. In other words, we need a unified vision of our energy future and how to implement it, which, when, what, where, which industries will win and which industries will lose, when, how, and who is going to pay for it, what we must give up to get it, where, whose backyard will provide the space and resources. Now, to some extent, in New York, we've tried to do what we can at a local level because, what I've said again and again, Congress and the White House together, both sides of the aisle, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, are not addressing a national issue, and it's been falling to state and city governments to do something. In New York City, we call our plan Plan YC, our green print, if you will, for the city's sustainable future. Because New York, like other nations, is filling that leadership vacuum on its own. And by the way, I'm talking about the real New York, not the one over the strip with the fake skyline, the fake Statue of Liberty, and the fake Brooklyn Bridge. I think I even saw a fake naked cowboy out there, but I wasn't sure. In the real New York, we're keeping it real with a Plan YC that lays out a comprehensive energy policy to clean our city's air, green our environment, fuel our economy, and do our part to reduce dependence on foreign oil. Yeah, they're all goals we should have, folks. The first key element of that policy is energy conservation. You know, we don't generate a lot of energy in New York City, and we can't really have a big influence on coal versus nuclear versus natural gas versus oil, but we can work on using less. And in New York, we're determined to do what no other city has ever attempted, and that is to keep our energy usage at or near its current level, even as our population grows. And to help lead the way, and as an example to the private sector, and I hope to embarrass the federal government, if that's possible, our administration has mapped out a plan to reduce our own energy consumption by city agencies by 30% by the year 2017. Now, 2017, if you do the math, isn't very many years from now. Most of us will be alive. Most of the people in Congress will still be in Congress. Unfortunately, sometimes Congress talks about some of these goals with a deadline of 2050. You just do the math and give me one person in Congress that you think is likely to still be serving in 2050. Going to be very hard to hold their feet to the fire with deadlines like that. We're doing it by investing heavily in making our schools, hospitals, police and fire stations, all of our city facilities more energy efficient. The same thing with our buses and garbage trucks and police cars and ambulances. We estimate that all the city's conservation investments will take an estimated 220 megawatts out of New York City's peak power demand. And within 5 years, all of these things will have paid for themselves. After that, New York City is going to make money by being green. And that's the message that we want to send to the private sector as well. You can have it both ways when it comes to the environment. In fact, the bottom line of all of our Plan YC energy initiatives is that we'll put hundreds of dollars a year back into the budgets of households in our city within a matter of a few years. This is not a short-term fix at the gas pump. This is real money over the long haul. Then, at the same time, to help private building owners to conserve, we'll soon roll out proposed new city laws and regulations that will require new levels of transparency about energy use in commercial buildings. New York, unlike other cities, generates 80% of its greenhouse gases from buildings and 20% from transportation. Virtually every other city in the country is exactly the reverse, 80% from transportation and 20% from buildings. But because we use a lot of mass transit and have very high density, it's the reverse. This will give the market, the new regulations, the information it needs to put a real value on energy efficiency. And they'll require cost-effective retrofits of our larger industrial and commercial and residential buildings. We're also joining cities across the nation in working for new building code standards to dramatically increase energy efficiency in new homes and businesses. And you should know we have a whole bunch of things like greening roofs and planting trees things that really will make a difference for all parts of our infrastructure and certainly reduce our consumption of energy. But let me come back to what has to be done with Washington. No matter how much cities and states do, we need Washington because conservation is country and global wide. This has to be a national priority. It's time for Washington to step up to the plate. Congress can take the first step when it returns to work next month by funding federal energy conservation block grants for the nation's cities. That way, more cities across the nation can do the kinds of things that we're doing in New York. Senators from both parties, including our host, Harry Reid, and Harry, thank you for having me, and mayors from coast to coast support this idea. Now, let's us make it happen. You know, conservation alone isn't enough, and we're not just stopping there in New York. We also need to dramatically step up the production of clean energy for our growing city and economy. For example, I believe that we've got to be willing to do what some other nations, such as France, have already done and increase our capacity of safe and clean nuclear generating power. It is controversial, it isn't perfect, but if you have a bunch of alternatives, you have to pick from the best. And doing nothing waiting for the perfect is a sure prescription for disaster. We also have to accept that a lot of alternative power projects now on the drawing boards won't produce their first kilowatt of electricity for many years. We still can reach into our pockets now. And if we don't do that now and make the investments for the deliverables down the road, our children won't have the benefit of 15 years working on it in the future. Also, by building new plants using cleaner fuels and state-of-the-art technology, and by modernizing our existing power plants, some of which in New York do burn highly polluting oil, we can begin generating cleaner power right now. There's two parts to the problem. One is to reduce greenhouse gases so we don't ruin our planet. The second, even shorter term, and maybe brings it a little more home to people, is we've got to stop polluting the air that you and me and our children are breathing today. By taking these steps, we think we can substantially improve energy efficiency, reduce pollution, and shrink output of greenhouse gases. And that's why they're big items in our 127 points of Plan YC. You may find it interesting that generating more renewable power is a real priority to us as well. And it's on its way. In June, we did win a big local legislative victory persuading our state government to let us grant state property tax breaks that encourage private building owners to go solar. And the state also okayed a proposal we backed that will permit New Yorkers who generate their own solar power to sell what they don't use back to other power customers, a real economic incentive for renewable energy. By this time next year, we'll have more than doubled the amount of solar power produced in New York City by installing new solar panels at schools and other government buildings. You may not think of New York City as a place where the sun shines all the time. It doesn't, but it certainly shines enough to make a difference, and we're quickly becoming a national leader in co-generating power at major residential and commercial developments. But that's just the beginning. Today, we're taking a step that will really kick alternative energy production into high gear in the Big Apple, and I can guarantee you will get us headlines tomorrow in the New York papers. This is a request for expression of interest that's going out to firms with strong track records in producing renewable energy. We want their best ideas for creating both small and large-scale projects serving New Yorkers. Such projects, for example, might be designed to draw power from the tides of the Hudson and East Rivers, something we're already doing on a pilot basis. They might call for dramatically increasing rooftop solar power production, which we estimate could meet nearly 20% of the city's need for electricity. They could tap geothermal energy. In fact, some private homeowners have already started to drill their own heat wells. Or perhaps companies will want to put wind turbines atop bridges and skyscrapers, or use the enormous potential of powerful offshore winds miles out off the Atlantic coast, where turbines could generate roughly twice the energy that land-based wind farms can. Some evidence shows that wind farms located far off our shores could meet up to 10% of our city's electricity needs within a decade. More than 100 years ago, a new statue standing tall in New York Harbor gave our nation its greatest symbol of freedom. In this century, that freedom is being undermined by dependence on foreign oil. So I would think that it would be a thing of beauty if, when Lady Liberty looks out on the horizon, she not only welcomes new immigrants to our shores, but lights their way with a torch powered by an ocean wind farm. And right now, I can't tell you exactly what any of these projects might look like, but I can tell you this. In New York City, we just don't think of alternative power as something that we just import from other parts of the nation. America's energy efficiency and energy security are our business as well. So when it takes to producing clean power, we're determined to make New York the number one city in the nation. And when it comes, yes, you can applaud, particularly if you're in New York City. When it comes to producing clean power, we can also make America the number one nation in the world. Now, T. Boone Pickens spoke here earlier today. I had lunch with him afterwards, and I will say, I think he had it right. The Great Plains are the potential Saudi Arabia of wind power. Harry Reid has it right, too. If we stepped up production of solar power in the desert Southwest, it could go a long ways towards meeting the entire nation's demand for electricity. Now, we can make it happen if we get serious about research and development, and if we upgrade our power infrastructure. These are both big ifs, but really realizing them both is within our reach. Now, when it comes to R&D, the first thing we can do is a no-brainer. Along with approving these energy conservation block grants that I talked about, Congress also needs to immediately extend renewable energy tax credits. That will incentivize alternative power projects and foster investment in renewable energy R&D. It's been estimated that this one action alone could spur $11 billion in investments and create 75,000 green-collar jobs. Then there's the proverbial elephant in the room, putting a price on carbon emissions. Our national fuel policy should be that energy that relies on heavily polluting fuels and outdated technology should be more expensive than clean and efficient power to reflect its true health and environmental costs. Such a policy would make alternative fuels more cost competitive, a major shot in the arm for their future and for ours. And any system that puts a price on carbon emissions should also fund R&D for clean power and energy efficiency. Now, some want a cap and trade system, which I have described as taking three right turns instead of one left one. I personally favor a carbon tax. Now, I know a lot of people don't like the word TAX, but it is the only thing that will work roughly corruption-free and get the job done that we need if we are going to save this planet. In all fairness, it's hard to see the courage we need to implement it. Nevertheless, we have to do something, and not just the usual cosmetic things. Finally, there's the issue that I started my remarks with. We need to upgrade our power transmission system, not just to ensure its reliability, but also to carry wind and solar power from here in the West to markets across the nation. Doing that won't be cheap, and it won't be easy. The Department of Energy estimates that generating 20% of the nation's electricity with wind power by the year 2030 would require investing $60 billion in our transmission infrastructure. Unfortunately, we're having to play catch-up, the result of an all-too-familiar pattern of neglect of our nation's vital infrastructure. The governors of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell, the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I have put together a group called Building America's Future to urge Congress and the President to face the crisis. You can see that crisis in the deplorable state of many of our airports and rail systems. You can see it in our power grid as well. Because for more than 20 years, from the mid-1970s to the late 1990s, even as America's demand for power increased, the amount invested in transmission lines fell by half. The blackout that hit New York and the Northeast 5 years ago was a wake-up call that it was time for us to change course and fast. Now, the good news is that investment in transmission lines is up, but we're going to have to keep it going if we're ever going to keep pace with a peak demand for power that some have estimated will grow by more than 17% over the next 10 years. And there's more to this problem than just dollars and cents. There's the regulatory delay involved in getting new projects approved. There are the perennial cries of "not in my backyard," which have stymied efforts to bring new power lines into New York City, which Governor Schwarzenegger is contending with in California, and which hold up transmission projects in every state in between. Now, I'm not saying that siting transmission lines is simple. I know that such projects have to be done right. I know that private property interests have to be respected and our environment has to be protected. But I also know this. The interstate highway system we built 50 years ago improved our nation's security and prosperity. And today, a new power grid throughout the nation will do exactly the same thing for our next generations. Because, yes, you can applaud, because if you want renewable energy to power America, then we need more transmission. Or if you want more nuclear energy, which I believe, as I've told you, and not popular necessarily in this room, if you believe our nation should have it, we need more transmission. If you want more plug-in hybrid cars, we need more transmission. If you want to stop poisoning the air with coal-burning power plants, we need more transmission. If, as T-Bone Pickens put it, you want to stop financing the war against ourselves, to quit putting money in the hands of people who, if they are not our enemies, may well not be our friends, then we need more transmission. If you want our nation to have energy efficiency and energy security, then guess what? We need more transmission. Now, you know, life is about choices. It's about setting priorities and solving problems. It's not about making the perfect the enemy of the good. And especially in this election year, it's about doing what's right for America's future. I'm there every day, faced with different alternatives. There's no one right choice, and no matter which one you pick, you're going to hurt yourself with another group of voters. You're going to hurt yourself with another group of supporters. You're going to have consequences that potentially down the road you don't know. But I do know that we have to make a decision. And I'm called on to do it every day. The President of the United States is called on to do it every day. Congress is called on to do it. We have to start working on the real problems facing this country. And sadly, for too many of these, whether it is health care or immigration, whether it is our infrastructure, our tax policy, stimulating our economy while fighting inflation, everybody just wants to talk about it. So in that spirit, since I still think that America is the greatest country in the world and that the best days for America are ahead, although we do have to summon up that courage, let the fantastic energy from this summit, and I'm sure from the time that you've spent in Vegas, let's make sure that what happened here in Vegas doesn't, as their campaign slogan says, stay in Vegas. This is exactly the kind of thing you do want to take home. Let's unleash the greatest natural resource that America has, not just our sun, our wind, our tides, and our untapped thermal energy, but also our optimism, our creativity, and our commitment to building a better world for our children. Because if we make the right choices now, if we get serious about a comprehensive national energy plan that this conference has done such a great job pointing out that America needs, then T. Boone Pickens' bold plan to generate wind power on our vast Great Plains and the wealth of clean solar power that Harry Reid and others know can be produced here in the sun-washed Southwest will benefit all Americans. They'll bring hundreds of thousands of green-collar jobs to our nation's heartland. They'll free utility companies in the Midwest from their reliance on the coal that pollutes our air and clouds our future. They'll give the people of New York and the Northeast the reliable and renewable power they need. They'll make America a leader in preventing global climate disaster and in saving our planet for our children. You know, free enterprise will help us meet these goals because our incomparable free energy system is based on the power of the marketplace. For too long, however, the market for energy has been skewed because we haven't been honest about the true costs of dirty energy. We're endangering our health, polluting our air, undermining our national security, and now threatening the future of the world. If we were honest with ourselves about these ignored but all too real costs, the price of these dirty fools would be vastly higher. And if we were honest about the marketplace of today, not 10 years from now, but today, we would make solar, wind, geothermal, and other alternative fuels cost-effective and economically viable. Are we honest enough to see that? Are we committed enough to a true, principled market system? If we're independent enough to change a failed status quo and create a better future, then we do have a future. The choice is ours. The time is now. Let's do this for us, for our kids, and for America. Thank you very much, and God bless.